Think about what happens when you get a splinter.
Oh, yeah, always annoying.
Right. But your body doesn't just, sit there and accept this foreign object. It immediately triggers an immune response. White
Exactly.
blood cells swarm the area. Inflammation creates this physical boundary, and your body actively isolates the threat to protect the larger system. We were completely used to this biological defense mechanism. I mean, it's just how living things survive.
Yeah, it's a beautifully self-contained protocol. The organism essentially quarantines a localized breakdown, so the rest of the body can just keep functioning without cascading failure.
Right. And today, we are taking that highly biological concept and applying it to a completely mind-bending theoretical question in astrophysics.
Which is quite the leap.
It is. So, for everyone listening, what if the fabric of the universe itself has that exact same kind of immune system? What if space-time doesn't just passively exist, but actively protects itself from infinite destruction?
Which is, I mean, a profound and highly unusual premise, bringing biological survival mechanisms into the realm of fundamental quantum physics and relativity. You just don't see that every day.
You really don't. And we've got a fascinating stack of sources in front of us today for this deep dive.
Very dense sources.
Extremely dense. We are looking at a highly speculative, incredibly mathematically dense framework detailing something called the Universal Singularity Defense Mechanism.
Right.
And there is also this companion piece on the frequency upsampling theory of gravity. So the mission for this deep dive is to unpack this complex framework, translate the dense tensor math into mechanical concepts that you can actually visualize, and explore a really wild proposition.
The workbench propositions.
Exactly. Whether human-designed electromagnetic systems could theoretically trigger this cosmic defense mechanism right on a laboratory workbench.
And to do that, we really have to look closely at the mathematical formalism they provide, because it attempts to connect extreme electromagnetic energy to an immediate, localized gravitational response.
Okay, let's unpack this. Where do we even begin with the idea of the universe playing defense?
Well, we begin with what the authors establish as the axiom of universal stability.
Axiom of universal stability.
Right. This is the absolute bedrock of their entire framework. The authors posit that the universe contains an implicit topological constraint.
Meaning what exactly?
Essentially, the very geometry of space-time fundamentally prevents the formation of naked or uncontained physical singularities.
Because when you hit a singularity, a point of infinite density, our current mathematical models just completely break.
They fell apart.
Physics basically throws up its hands and stops working.
Yeah, exactly. And the authors argue that the absence of these naked singularities in our observable universe isn't just, a lucky accident.
Or a flaw in our math.
Right. They suggest it reflects a fundamental structural conservation law. Space-time is physically constrained to remain stable.
So, if the universe has this hard-coded rule against these destructive infinite points forming, how does it actually enforce the rule? Like, when the math starts breaking down, how does reality step in to catch the error?
That brings us to their gradient trigger.
The trigger. Okay.
The authors analyze electromagnetic systems to demonstrate this, specifically looking at resonant electrical circuits.
Standard circuits.
Yeah, but imagine a circuit that is pushed to the absolute brink, approaching a singular state. The impedance, which is the circuit's resistance to the alternating current, it plummets towards zero.
Wow, zero resistance.
And without resistance, the intensity of the energy spikes violently.
So the energy flux gets hyperconcentrated into this microscopic area.
Correct. And when that energy flux achieves a critical spatial gradient at a specific microscopic coordinate.
Wait, spatial gradient. Let's clarify that real
Oh,
quick.
sure. A spatial gradient basically measures how drastically energy changes over a physical distance. So when the difference in energy from one microscopic point to the next hits a massive mathematically defined threshold, space-time essentially recognizes that a singularity is about to tear through reality.
Ah, so the immune response kicks in.
Exactly.
This makes me think of an audio feedback loop. Like when someone walks a microphone too close to a speaker and you get that piercing, escalating screech.
Oh, yeah, the worst sound.
Right. The sound enters the mic, gets amplified, comes out the speaker, goes back into the mic, and the signal just loops and amplifies toward infinity.
Right, it runs away.
But modern audio amplifiers have a compressor built in. When the signal gets dangerously loud, the compressor automatically clamps down on the voltage to stop the amplifier from literally blowing its own cones out.
Huh.
So the universe is throwing a spatial compressor on the energy signal.
That is actually a highly effective mechanical analogy. When that critical spatial gradient is reached, the universe refuses to allow the mathematical infinity to manifest physically.
It clamps down.
It actively generates compensating micro black holes to lock down the uncontrolled collapse.
Wait, if the universe is trying to stop a singularity, why is its defense mechanism to create black holes? Isn't that like fighting a fire with two bigger fires?
I know, it sounds completely counterintuitive. But what's fascinating here is that the universe isn't just throwing a standard supermassive black hole at the problem.
Okay.
According to the framework, space-time generates a highly controlled dual black hole system.
Dual, like two of them.
Yes, it is a nested space-time configuration. An inside black hole and an outside black hole working simultaneously in tandem.
Nested. Like a Russian nesting doll of gravity.
Sort of, yeah.
How does that even work without them immediately just merging into one giant void?
The mechanics are surprisingly elegant, actually. The inside micro black hole is the direct target. It forms at the exact coordinate of maximum singular intensity.
Right at the center of the problem.
The very spot where your runaway circuit was about to break reality. But the mathematical models show that the mass of this inside black hole doesn't grow.
Really? It doesn't grow.
No, it actually decays exponentially, specifically because of its exposure to that extreme energy gradient.
So it acts like a sponge. It swallows that infinite spike of energy,
yeah.
And the process of absorbing that sheer gradient basically dissolves the black hole itself.
Yes, exactly. It is an immediate containment vessel that immediately begins to evaporate.
Wow.
But simultaneously, the outside black hole forms at a specific radial distance away from that center point.
Okay, so further out.
Right. And as the inside black hole dissolves and loses its mass, the outside black hole grows proportionally.
Oh, I see. The outside one is the actual quarantine boundary.
You've got it. It creates an expanding gravitational shell. It's physically constructing a frontier, an event horizon that completely separates normal space-time from this chaotic gravitational influence zone.
Okay, so the inside one takes the hit and burns itself out, while the outside one balloons outward to contain the shrapnel.
That's a great way to put it.
But building an expanding black hole shell, even a microscopic one, that requires a phenomenal amount of mass and energy.
It absolutely does.
The source material talks extensively about the total mass balance. I think they call it Theorem 2.3.
Yes, Theorem 2.3, total mass balance.
Right. So if this outside boundary is absorbing energy to grow, where is the deficit coming from? The input energy of our little lab circuit isn't enough to literally forge a black hole out of thin air.
And that is the crucial gap the framework has to fill to obey the laws of thermodynamics. You can't just get something from nothing.
Right.
The models propose that the quantum vacuum itself acts as the energy reservoir.
The empty space around it.
Well, we have to remember that the vacuum of space-time isn't actually empty.
Oh, true.
It is this boiling sea of potential energy and virtual particles popping in and out of existence constantly.
The quantum foam.
Exactly. The math suggests this vacuum serves as the source and eventually the sink for the compensating mass energy required by the universe to build this defense response.
So it's literally borrowing material from the empty space around the event to build the quarantine wall.
Temporarily borrowing, yes.
And once the threat is neutralized, they eventually reach what they call a metastable equilibrium, right? Where the gravitational binding energy equals the energy of the gradient.
Yes. And the stability of the universe is maintained. The immune response worked.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Because the authors don't just stop at describing what the universe does to protect itself.
No, they go much further.
They attempt to explain how the universe fundamentally communicates gravity in the first place.
Which is wild.
Yeah. And this requires looking at mass and gravity through the lens of signal processing.
It really requires a complete paradigm shift.
Oh.
The authors introduce a concept they call the penetration problem.
The penetration problem. Okay.
Right. So every single piece of matter possesses an intrinsic rest frequency based on its mass energy equivalence.
The E equals MC squared stuff.
Exactly. The formula is straightforward. Mass times the speed of light squared divided by Planck's constant.
Right. Connecting Einstein to quantum mechanics. But when you run those numbers for everyday objects, the results are just absurd.
They are math.
The text notes that for a standard 1 kilogram weight, this native rest frequency is roughly 1.35 times 10 to the 50th power hertz.
Yeah.
That is an astronomically high frequency. I mean, 10 to the 50th. That's inconceivable.
It is. But the problem isn't just that the frequency is high. At a frequency that high, the wavelength of that signal becomes sub-Planck length.
Meaning it's smaller than the Planck length.
Right. It is smaller than the smallest possible measurable distance in quantum physics,
Wow.
which means mechanically the signal cannot interact with or propagate through the medium of normal space-time.
It's like trying to use a massive, powerful subwoofer to play a deep bass note in a giant concert hall, but the acoustic impedance is completely
You know,
mismatched.
that's a good analogy.
Like, the signal can't even vibrate the air, it can't penetrate the medium of the room. The sound is just completely trapped inside the speaker cone.
That is a perfect way to conceptualize the isolation. The native gravity signal of matter is trapped. Space-time acts as a frequency-dependent medium.
Okay, so it filters things out.
Exactly. High-frequency signals with sub-Planck wavelengths get heavily attenuated, meaning they scatter and fade almost instantly.
So, if the native signal is trapped, how does an apple fall from a tree? How does gravity work at all if the signal can't get out of the matter?
The paper's answer is a concept called heterodyne mixing,
Heterodyne mixing.
which is a principle pulled straight out of radio engineering.
Right.
When high-frequency electromagnetic energy, like ambient photons, interacts with matter, it upsamples the matter's intrinsic frequency.
It changes the frequency.
The external energy acts as a pump. It mixes with the trapped matter signal and creates a new penetrative activated gravity signal.
I want to make sure we really nail down how heterodyne mixing works because it's so crucial for anyone listening to understand.
It is the key to the whole theory.
So think about a dog whistle. When you blow a dog whistle, it creates a sound wave vibrating so fast that human ears physically cannot detect it. But if you blow two different dog whistles at the exact same time, say one at 40,000 hertz and one at 41,000 hertz, the two sound waves overlap and interfere with each other.
They create a B frequency.
Exactly. They create a bead frequency representing the difference between them, which in this case is 1,000 hertz. And suddenly, you hear a loud, clear tone.
Because 1,000 hertz is well within human hearing.
Yes, the overlapping high frequencies created a new, lower frequency that can actually penetrate your hearing range.
And that is exactly what is happening at a quantum level here.
Yeah.
The universe is translating the trapped sub-Planck frequency into a wavelength that space-time can actually hear and transmit.
So what does this all mean for you as you're listening to this? If you've ever wondered why gravity feels so incredibly weak compared to, say, a basic refrigerator magnet, it's because the everyday matter in your body is barely upsampled.
It's highly inefficient.
Your body's gravity signal is largely trapped inside you. The Newtonian gravity we experience holding us to the Earth is just the tiny fractional leakage of this upsampling process happening at very low efficiencies.
Yes. The sources actually go so far as to suggest that the fundamental forces we know, electromagnetism, the strong nuclear force, the weak nuclear
The
force,
big ones.
right, they are actually just frequency up converters.
Wow.
Their primary function is to raise the effective frequency of matter so it can broadcast a gravitational footprint into the universe.
Which brings us right back to our dual black holes.
Yeah.
Because this upsampling theory perfectly explains why the black holes behave the way they do during a singularity event.
It really does. It provides a mechanism for understanding one of the greatest debates in modern astrophysics, the preservation of information.
Oh man, the information paradox.
Exactly. We have to look at a singularity not just as a point of infinite mass, but as an information overload.
Okay.
When the matter density approaches infinity, the gravity signal intensity skyrockets and the local gravity channel becomes completely saturated.
Too much data.
Information physically cannot propagate outward.
The network crashes because there's too much data trying to force its way through a finite bandwidth.
So the dual black hole system steps in and acts as a demodulator. It filters the signal.
How does it filter it?
Well, the inside black hole represents pure matter that has been completely stripped of its upsampling.
Wow.
All external energy fields have been excluded, so its signal reverts to being trapped behind the event horizon.
It goes back to that native trapped state.
Exactly. The outside black hole, conversely, represents the accumulated upsampled gravity signals that can successfully penetrate outward into the universe.
But Stephen Hawking said black holes destroy information. Are these sources saying he was wrong?
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, the sources are suggesting that the destruction of information is actually an illusion.
An illusion.
What we perceive as destruction is merely a drastic frequency translation.
Because the heterodyne upsampling process is mathematically reversible.
Yes, you're hitting on the core resolution of the paradox. The framework demonstrates that the upsampling mechanism preserves all the quantum information present in the original matter signal.
Okay, let me make sure I begin.
Because you can mathematically reverse the heterodyne mixing to find the original source frequencies, the information isn't lost or deleted.
Right.
It's simply shifted to a frequency regime that we, existing outside the boundary, simply lack the apparatus to access.
It's like encrypting a hard drive.
Exactly like that.
The data isn't gone. The ones and zeros are all still there. You just don't have the decoder ring anymore, so it looks like random noise to you.
Mm-hmm.
The universe encrypts the dangerous anomaly to maintain cosmic censorship.
Cosmic censorship being the foundational idea that the universe hides physics-breaking singularities behind event horizons to protect the observable universe.
Right.
This theory finally provides a mechanical signal processing explanation for how and why that censorship actually executes.
Okay, this is all incredibly elegant theoretical astrophysics, but what absolutely blew my mind about this document is the turn it takes toward the end.
Chapter 7.
Yes. They steer this entire conversation away from abstract cosmic theory and bring it right down to physical, tangible reality.
Yeah.
They actually outline an experimental framework to test this on a lab bench.
They outline a very specific circuit design for gradient generation. They want to see if human engineers can intentionally force this cosmic immune response.
And they propose using a resonant LC circuit.
Yes.
An LC circuit being a standard electrical circuit consisting of an inductor, which is basically a coil of wire that stores energy in a magnetic field, and a capacitor, which stores energy in an electric field.
But configured with highly specific parameters.
Not just stuff you'd find at a hardware store.
Definitely not. An inductor with a high permeability ferrite core, and a capacitor engineered with a very controlled breakdown threshold.
Okay.
By driving the circuit toward its critical frequency, pushing it toward that singular state of zero impedance we discussed earlier.
Where the resistance drops to zero.
Exactly. And by carefully monitoring the Q factor, you create a local oscillator. You are intentionally generating that sheer spatial gradient of electromagnetic energy flux.
I want to pause on the Q factor real quick because I see that term on audio equalizers all the time. The
quality factor.
Right. It describes how narrow or wide a frequency band is. Why is monitoring the Q factor the key to building a microscopic black hole?
Because the Q factor in an electrical circuit measures its resonance. A very high Q factor means the circuit is losing almost zero energy to heat or electrical resistance.
It's super efficient.
It acts like a pendulum swinging in a perfect vacuum. You keep pushing it at the exact right moment, and the swings get higher and higher and higher.
And it never slows down.
Right. By maximizing the Q factor, you are forcing the energy intensity to spike violently into that dangerous mathematical territory without the circuit just melting into a puddle of slag.
You are intentionally trying to give the universe a splinter to see if the white blood cells show up.
That is exactly what they are proposing.
So if I build this thing in my garage and I crank the Q factor, what actually happens? Do my wrenches start floating off the workbench?
Well, before things start floating, your watch would actually betray you.
My watch.
The first observable prediction isn't a massive shift in gravity, but a time dilation signature.
Oh, wow.
The expanding gravitational boundary of the outside black hole dilates time locally. So atomic clocks placed near the device would suddenly desync from clocks further away.
Okay, so my watch slows down. Then what?
Then you would see the measured gravitational anomalies. You should detect deviations from standard Newtonian gravity in the immediate vicinity of the device.
The gravity actually shifts.
Yes. The pull of gravity would alter, directly correlated with the phase of your electromagnetic field.
And what about radiation? Because if we have evaporating black holes on the bench, there has to be an exhaust, right?
You would detect gamma ray bursts preceding the stabilization of the anomaly.
Gamma rays. That sounds dangerous.
It's Hawking radiation. As that inside micro black hole takes the hit and decays exponentially, it emits radiation that inversely correlates with the growth of the outside quarantine shell.
That is incredible. And finally, there's an apparent energy loss exceeding normal resistive losses, right?
Correct.
Because your circuit is actively bleeding energy into the expanding gravitational boundary and the quantum vacuum.
The energy is going into building the wall.
But let me ask you this. If we are talking about literally building a black hole generator on a workbench, what happens if the input gradient oscillates like in an AC circuit? Does the black hole just pulse?
Yes. The authors mathematically model this exact scenario.
Really?
If the input gradient oscillates, the system exhibits oscillatory behavior. The math explicitly predicts what they term pulsating gravitational boundaries?
Pulsating boundaries.
The outside black hole would literally expand and contract, breathing in phase with the driving frequency of your local oscillator.
A breathing black hole on a workbench. That is both terrifying and incredible.
It really is.
We started this journey with the idea of a universe protecting itself from singularities, like a biological immune system.
And we went pretty far down the rabbit hole.
We sure did. We discovered the dual black hole defense system. One to absorb the spike, one to build the quarantine wall.
The nested configuration.
We learned that gravity might just be a heterodyne radio signal bouncing off the quantum vacuum. And we ended with an actual blueprint for a tabletop gravitational anomaly generator.
And, you know, this raises an important question about the fundamental nature of physics itself.
Oh.
We are so accustomed to thinking of physical laws as merely descriptive. They just observe and tell us what dead matter does.
Right, like rocks falling.
But the implications of this framework suggest that physical law might be fundamentally protective. The universe actively self-organizes into stable configurations to balance its own signal loads and prevent information overload.
It is an active participant in its own survival. And that actually leads to one final, truly provocative thought, pulled from the philosophical implications of the source text. I want to leave you, the listener, with this to mull over today.
It is quite the conceptual leap, but it is a logical extension of their upsampling framework.
Exactly. So think about this. If upsampling requires intense, high-frequency activity to translate normal matter into a stronger, penetrative gravitational signal.
Right.
And human consciousness, the very act of thinking, involves intense, high-frequency electromagnetic brain activity.
The synapses firing.
Could consciousness itself be acting as a micro-upsampler?
It's a staggering idea.
Could human thought theoretically possess a measurable, albeit infinitesimally small, gravitational footprint?
A physical weight to a thought.
If the universe is a vast, self-regulating signal processing system, what kind of signal are you broadcasting into the cosmos just by thinking about it? Something to ponder until our next deep dive.